Welcome to the West Highland Way Race podcast number 6. I'm John Kinniston, and in this episode we've got some interesting items for you once again. And the main one is an interview with Marco and Thomas, and I'll mention that in a moment, and also one or two other things as well. But before we get on to the podcast, I just want to mention our night of training and inspiration in Edinburgh. This is something that Run and Become with Adrian Start put on the last few years, and we've got one again this year. All the details are on the website, westhighlandwayrace.org, and you can find the details, find all the details there. But I just thought I'd let you know here as well. It's on Monday, the 19th of March, 2012, from 7 o'clock until 9:30-ish. The venue is at St. Andrew's and St. George's West Church Hall, 58 Shankwick Place, Edinburgh, EH2, 4RT. And the new Run and Become has just moved to 20 Queens Ferry Street, which is just around the corner. And that will be open until 6:30 on the evening of the event. So if you want to combine the two to go and visit the new shop and then go across to the evening, and you can do so. There's four main presentations. The first one, I'm not sure what the order they are, but we've got Dr. Chris Ellis, who's the race director, and he'll be giving advice on warning signals to look out for when you're running distances of 50 miles plus. We've got Dr. Andrew Murray, who's a sports and exercise medicine doctor, as well as an experienced ultra-distance competitor. And Andy, in 2011, Andy ran from Scotland to Sahara, which I featured on one of the blogs a few weeks ago. And he's also running the West Highland Way Race this year, which will be his second time of running. And he's going to do a talk on nutritional aspects of ultras and his own ultra adventures. We've got Adrian Start, Run and Become's own 12-time finisher of the West Highland Way and the current Scottish ultra-distance team manager. And Adrian will talk on what could limit your performance, whatever your ability, and how you can push those limits to achieve your goals. And then the fourth talk will be Ken and Sue Walker. Over the last 10 years, Ken and Sue have supported many of their Carnegie Harriers clubmates in this and other ultra races, as well as Scottish ultra, 100k and 24-hour teams. They will give a short presentation on crewing for ultras. So it sounds a really good evening. The evening will end with an open question and answer session with a full panel of ultra expertise. So anyone's welcome. And if you'd like to go, if you could go onto the website, and then there's a link to Run and Become's site, and then there's a link there to be able to contact Adrian just to let you know, let him know you're coming. But that will be a great evening, and if anything's to go, if the last few years is anything to go by. For those who can't make it, I will be videoing the evening again, and we'll be putting the videos on the website as soon as I can after the event. And also this year, what I'll try and do is see if I can record them, so maybe we can put the talks as podcasts in future episodes as well. So I would recommend you to get there. There's nothing like meeting people and being part of the evening. But if you have to travel a distance and you're a long way away and you, for whatever reason you can't make it, then you will be able to watch what's going on there as well. So that's on Monday the 19th of March, and we look forward to seeing as many as possible in that evening in Edinburgh. So on to this podcast. The main item for this podcast is an interview that Thomas and Marco did together. Now, if you know these two guys, they've had some great finishes in the West Highland Way, and I think their true potential is still to come. I think they've got faster times. But they're two guys who train a lot together and have really spurred each other on. And I asked them whether they would do an interview on for a podcast. And I think they tried to, well, I know Thomas did, tried to sit down and do it formally, and he just felt it didn't work at all. So they had this great idea of doing it while they ran. So last Saturday, they ran 24 miles on the canal alongside the River Clyde, and they decided to use part of that time to do an interview. So it lasts about 45 minutes, and basically it's Thomas and Marco chatting together about the West Highland Way as they ran. And I think the average ran about 7:35 pace, so they weren't hanging around. And you get the full sound effects. You get their feet stamping, you get the Garmin watch going off, you get them clearing their nose and their mouth, and you get people going by, you get going through the tunnel. So I can't vouch for how good the quality of the recording is, in the sense, if you're listening to this as you run, then it may be a little bit off-putting. But the quality of the actual conversation is well worth listening. So maybe this is a podcast that it might be harder to actually listen to on the run. You might need to sit at your computer or sit somewhere quiet and be able to get the full effect of it. But it is well worth listening to, as they chat about their own experiences and what they've learned and what their plans are for this year's race as well. So well worth a listen. And thanks to Marco and Thomas for doing that for us. And then the next shorter interview, lasts about 8 minutes, is with Colin Knox. As last week, I asked Caroline a few questions about her training and plans for the race. And this time, Colin Knox has been willing to also do an interview once a month. And we'll be following Colin's plans for his first West Harlem Way race this June. And again, that's interesting to hear, just someone who's thinking about and his plans for the race and his training and what he hopes to get out of it. And it'll be fun to follow his progress over the next few weeks. And then finally, we've got one of my lessons, this time just one of them, lessons that I've learned from the West Harlem Way race. And that one about the use of a buff. So hopefully you'll enjoy that one as well.
Where do we go? Nobody knows. I've gotta say, I'm on my way down.
Better explain to the people where we're doing.
Yeah. Good morning, everyone.
Again. I've already done that. How many takes is this going to take?
No, second take. I'm here on the Glasgow Canal path. We are on our 24 mile morning jog, which we don't do every morning. To tell you the truth, I'm running with the legendary Marco Conzani.
Legendary what?
Well, he's legendary for having finished the West Harlem race 3 times out of 4 attempts, whilst me, Thomas, also known as the
crazy German,
very rational thinking German,
slightly unhinged,
finished twice out of 4 attempts, so he has 3 goblets.
Well, you should stop at King's House. Why do you keep doing that?
Well, I did actually stopping in my 3rd and 4th attempt. So Marco, what got you interested in the West Harlem race in the first place?
Well, once we get through these puddles, when I was younger, I used to walk the West Harlem way.
How many times? Did you do the whole thing?
Yeah, I did the whole thing twice, I think. But I've started it 4 times. That sounds awfully familiar. So, when I was younger, I remember, I think it was maybe 1989, 1990, reading a newspaper article on the West Harlem Way race and how some superhumans could finish in 18 hours. And so I went and tried to do the West Harlem Way of walking it, and did just under 3 days, which at that time I thought was really, really good. But I couldn't comprehend how someone could do 18 hours at that time, which I think was the record for the West Harlem Way race. And so I never really thought much about it after that, until I started working, and there was this mental person called Ian Beattie.
I know him, yeah.
And we were like gobsmacked because he ran the West Ham Way, and it was the first person I ever knew that could run the West Ham Way.
Do you also, obviously, I have seen the West Ham Way race DVD from 2005.
Yes.
Which I can only highly recommend to get pulled on. Off.
Yeah, well, Thomas takes £1 commission and everyone's sold.
No.
That's still fit. But that year that we, when we're talking about why I got into the Western Way, I decided we would do the Caledonian Challenge for the work. And it was the same year that Ian Beattie was running it. And it was the first time I'd ever saw the race.
Well, did you actually meet Ian Beattie?
Yeah.
You must have.
I did, on Rannoch Moor.
Uh-huh.
And,
oh dear.
I couldn't believe it. At that time there was, must have only been about 20 people running or something. It was a very small number. Maybe more, but it didn't look that many. But I met Ian Beattie, and I don't think he even recognised us. He was in such a trance. But then
I think he even complained about the runners.
The Caledonian
The walkers, yeah.
That's true, because it got the Caledonian Challenge was so big. So they're now in different weekends. But go forward a few years and Debbie and I decided to do the Devils. And once we did that, we met Ian Beattie one day at the Fort William half marathon, and he didn't even know I ran. And so
Eddie's half.
That's it, Eddie's half. And I said to him, tell me when the West Ham Way entries open. And he did, and we entered. And that was that.
And that's when you started training seriously.
Yes, and that's when I met you.
Yeah, we...
And we raced each other.
Yeah, we...
Training run.
Exactly, yeah, we did it... probably not right. Preparing for those races by doing long runs too fast. But we're now much wiser and, you know...
No, we're just older and can't go that fast anymore.
Well... Well, maybe that's wisdom then. Okay, that's part one. Let me just stop this and see. Part two, Marco, tell us about your first race experience of the West Highland Way race. What year was it? You entered.
What year is it just now? 2012?
2009 was 2008.
2008?
Yeah, 2008.
Yes.
Well, I entered the first time as well. So how did your race go?
Not very well.
Were you not in the lead?
That's where it all went wrong. I took the racing practice from training and pushed it into the actual race. And by rear end and wondered why. No one else was in sight and I was in first. Yeah. I don't think I ate enough. I don't think. On hindsight nowadays, I would say I wish I'd watched the race before running it, because I had no idea what I should be eating, what I should be drinking, and really tried to survive on a mixture of gels and the kind of things you come from a road running background. So when I got to King's House, I had no energy and it took me hours and hours. I was aching limbs, and the one lasting image I see from the whole of that year's West Ham Way was coming into Lindervar and John Kynaston
smiling,
coming past me smiling, enjoying the race, loving every minute of it, and I was completely broken and I could hardly even walk. But
was it not injury as well? You had some shin problems.
I had shin problems. But just everything went wrong. I did it wrong. And if anyone is ever running for the first time, you know, it's definitely a good idea to have seen the race or even any ultra. And I had gone along there having really done two ultras but never actually having watched one. Luckily I did have a support team. One person in the support team had looked after someone else before, so at least there was something in there.
Okay, so thanks so far, Marco. Let's just remind you, we were supposed to go 8 minute mile pace, and I have to slow you down now.
Yeah,
because we did some 7:15. So, right, but you had better race experience, Marco. What was the second race? Wasn't much better than the first one, I think. You finished, but it wasn't your best, was it?
No, the second race. I tried a new, different method of training, and I did a lot of back-to-back runs. But again, I was racing a lot of the training, not recovering properly, and just pushing, and your body can only take so much. That plus, I was trying to rush training a wee bit because Debbie wasn't running after giving birth to Cairn, and I just couldn't do ever. I couldn't do it, and I wasn't running consistently. I was running back to back 40-mile runs,
yeah,
over a couple of weeks, and then taking 3 or 4 days off. And again, you're better off running less long runs, but running consistently every day rather than taking days and days off because you've ran 40 miles at race pace. So my second year was worse, and it was an absolute nightmare that I considered even just giving up running that year.
Thank God you didn't.
I'd have made good support for you, Thomas.
Oh, well, maybe this year then. Don't want to leak any secrets. Right, so, but let's tell us about your much more positive experience the following year.
The following year, I actually had a plan for running. I didn't just draw up the week before. And so I had a person that coached me, Mark Johnson, and he organised lunchtime sessions. So I was training consistently every lunchtime. That plus, I had gone to Hampden and had a lactic threshold test, which had helped me get some zones in training. So this had given me what an easy long run should feel like, rather than going out and wanting to be running at full pace the whole way. So I started to recover much quicker from runs, and just having a bunch of people to go out every lunchtime with made me get out every lunchtime. So I now had the consistency, and so I was in a much better place when we started the race that year. But the actual race, we spent the first 60 miles needing with the with a really upset stomach.
Pardon me.
And it actually took Silky to get rid of it. She gave me some sort of tablets or painkillers or something around about 60-70 miles, and all of a sudden, after spending about 40 minutes in the toilet, I was really, really feeling good, and managed to fifth position.
I think she just gave you some anti-diarrhea tablets.
Was it?
Yeah.
I can't remember. It was a bit foggy when you get to 70 minutes.
I don't think she gave you any painkillers.
No. I remember running into Kinlochleven, and it felt I was just on a... I just overtaking person after person that day. It felt fantastic. But I think maybe having an upset stomach for so long in that race made me hang back a little bit.
Right, okay.
And so, you know, instead of rushing off like a lot of other runs have been, I hung back and then picked people off. And when you start to pick people off, they naturally start to speed up as well. That was much more consistent pace, rather than...
Not like today, because we're going still too fast.
Wow. Right, okay.
So you finished in what position?
Fifth
place. Oh, well done. What was your time?
1840-something. 1847.
You didn't beat Neil Gibson's time, though.
No. Which was the time I was aiming for.
Was one of our targets, wasn't it?
Well, I did meet Neil at Kinloch leaving.
What was it? What was it? 1842, wasn't it, Neil Gibson's time?
Well, I met Neil at Kinloch leaving, and he says there's no way I'm going to beat my time. And I really did go for it.
But you had a very, very strong last section.
Oh, I shouldn't have been anywhere near it, but it's such a strong last section. The strongest I've ever felt at the end of a race. That I really thought, if it hadn't been my Garmin ran out of battery, so I had no clue what time it was, I even think that.
So that was basically from mile 81, what is kind of leaving about 81 to, it's 14 miles the last section, so to mile 95.
Me and you both had.
You had the two fastest, yeah.
But I think, did we not have the first and second fastest last marathon?
Last section, yeah. Yeah, I too had a miraculous last section.
Because maybe we should really introduce you as well and ask you your year, first year running the West Antway was the same year as me, and it's where we both met each other. And tell us really how that went and what went wrong, because you DNF'd that year.
Yeah, my race was really a disaster from the start. Must have been my training got wrong as well. Training too hard, too much, and on race day I felt, as soon as we started, my legs were really bad news.
Did you not feel quite bad the first weeks before it as well?
No, I felt quite bad the weeks before as well.
Yeah.
I had peaked at 100 miles, but it was really force feeding, as I would call it, force feeding myself. Miles. Because I thought, I'll manage 100 miles and then taper down. It will speed me up in the race, but it didn't. So I was passed by usually really moderate starters who seemed to be flying past. I remember Tim Downey. I couldn't keep up with him. Not that he's a slow runner, but he's certainly not someone who races from the start. Well,
we can blank his name out later.
Yeah. No, I mean, but that was classic. I couldn't keep up with, certainly not with you, you were kind of disappeared in the distance, but I was struggling up Conic Hill. That was really bad news. I thought it shouldn't feel that hard to get up that hill so early in the race. And it just got worse and worse. I had hoped that at some point it would all kick in and I would all of a sudden be fresh and fast, but got just downhill from the start.
I do always remember a picture that year that I saw of you in the car yourself with all the provisions, and you were gutted, and I think you just literally pulled out, but that picture tells more than anything you could blog about.
Yeah.
You were just broken and you were very upset actually that year.
I mean, I was extremely emotional. I remember this. I was, because I had so much anticipated the race as a great experience, prepared and thought about this race so much, read all the race tales and what I thought the race would be for me. It was just,
you saw yourself
the exact, no, I mean, I had thought I could run certainly under 21 hours. Just from taking my fling time, my fling was a 9:20, so that gave me all you know, some people say double your fling time, but I was even kind of conservative in my finishing time, sub 21, maybe sub 20. But while I was kind of going over the run of Moor, completely disintegrating, I was counting down, oh dear, sub 20 is not going to happen, sub 21, sub 24 is not going to happen. And I thought, so many hours of struggle ahead, and it was just, it was very, very emotional. I just completely collapsed then.
Was that a hard decision to make, to pull out, or was it easy because you just couldn't finish?
I mean, that decision was kind of growing over the previous hours. It was not a sudden decision. It was just a disaster, basically. I know, if, I mean, if I consider how bad my legs were after this for the following weeks, I was really going as far as I could on that day. It wasn't really an injury or fatigue.
Perhaps
it was a complete lock.
Do you think lockdown. Perhaps you got to the start of the race not 100%, but you'd raced your training and not prepared correctly, that you were overtrained at the beginning? Or
I mean, it's never was never quite clear what actually caused this, but I know from what I remember the last weeks were before the race in training, I couldn't run 8 minute mile pace for a mile anymore. And I thought, that's good, because I'm tapering now and it will all fall into place. But what I know from other experiences, that just shouldn't happen. It should be easy to run.
Yeah.
To be fresh. I need to be feeling fresh from the legs. I need to kind of just work.
You went from that year and 6 months of your life.
Yes, absolutely.
Up to the West Ham way.
Yeah.
Completely shattering. But you had, you still entered the year after, and the training went better that year. But
yes,
again, it was the same outcome.
Yeah.
What was different? What was,
I mean, one problem was that I got injured 3 weeks before the race, and even had a couple of injuries, so I completely stopped my training 3 weeks before the race, and the only run I did in those 3 weeks leading up to the race was a 1.5 mile jog. I think it was 1.5 miles just after visiting the physio. And the physio told me, yeah, if you want to go for a wee jog, that's okay. But I didn't tell him about that I was going to attempt the West Highland Way.
You'd have been committed.
Yeah. But I was really delighted to start running again. And I made it to the King's Horse Hotel, which I consider still a good success, considering multiple injuries and this brutal, it wasn't a taper, it was just complete stop of training 3 weeks before the race. It just doesn't work.
And so was the decision to pull out that year easier because you still had felt?
There wasn't a question really.
But you,
I just couldn't move anymore.
Right.
So,
and you still felt you'd achieved something after all that injury.
Yeah, I mean, it was frustrating. Two DNFs.
And Debbie never let you forget it.
No. She's kind of hard and unforgiving. She doesn't like DNFs.
And so, the third year running, you decided to enter all that punishment again.
Yes. And training, I mean, I think it's a learning process. You learn how to train for this. If you look at the results of like Richie Cunningham, he started his first with the Anglo race, he finished it rather moderately and then got faster eventually.
Like 23 years or something?
Yeah, something like 23. So he kind of learned how to train for it, and now he clocks unbeatable sub 17 hour finishes. And if you look at other top runners, they go through the same experience. Interestingly, there are plenty of first time finishers don't seem to struggle at all the first time.
But
I don't know, maybe it was the competitiveness.
You don't think the first time finishers that do really well are trained for other ultras? We were kind of green
well,
behind the ears.
Potentially, yes, of course, yeah.
Green wet behind the ears, I don't know. We were naive, we went from a road running background where every run has to hurt.
Yeah.
Every race hurts.
Yeah.
We're trying to. And so.
Well, we enjoyed our training races. Yeah.
Yeah.
They were fun, but they weren't efficient.
No.
No.
Yeah, doing 6:30 for the double of the Highlands training run.
Yeah, you did this.
You weren't far off it.
No, I did so with 7 hour once.
Still, but fast. But
no, not efficient really. But I also, sorry.
There was then you went on to the year that you finished and you got 18:51.
Yeah, I guess got beaten by you by a few minutes. But I really enjoyed the last section as well. I was more moving really well. Also because I was struggling in the first half. So it might really have benefited both of us that we both had our problems in the first half. I had this chin injury and you had your stomach bug. So we were actually fresh for the last section, which is of course an absolute delight. Doesn't get better in an ultra.
Yeah, that was
nothing better than a strong finish.
Phenomenal. Good fun.
Yeah. No, I was absolutely euphoric.
And so after that I would say you were addicted. And so you ran again last year. And an absolutely fantastic time. What position were you?
Fourth last year.
Wooden spoon, that's what you always say to me.
Yeah. No, but I was no disappointed in being fourth.
What was your time?
Under 18 hours, 17, 40.
You remember this, it's tattooed in your arm.
Yeah. It was just under 17:50, 17:48 I think.
So an hour's PB.
Almost.
What was different this year or last year than the year before?
I mean, my training obviously hadn't matured, so it was similar to the year before. Interestingly, the first half in both races was equally fast, so I had a stronger second half. But I didn't have the injury problem I had the year before. So I was just, I don't know. The training was similar. Yeah.
Well, just some years click, don't they?
Yeah.
The weather was worse last year, so.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I didn't like the weather at all. I lost a lot of time in the first half of fiddling, changing the shoes twice.
The first half was dry, the second half was
a bit. No, but I mean, it was very wet.
Yeah.
Because that's why I changed the shoes in the first half. The second half was in places really horrible. I remember running through Glencoe and oh, it was cold, wet, windy. I was kind of almost hypothermic. Not nice. But it got warm again in the last section, and I had a fantastic last section again. So the Larrick grew, sorry, the Larrick Moor. Larrick Moor is really my place.
Well, right, you've always enjoyed that section.
I always, yeah.
Even in training.
Okay, so I think there were a few questions from John about tips for the race or something, or race preferences, like would you run the West Anglia race with road or trail shoes?
That's a good question. Every year I've done it with road shoes, and that's been fine. If I was to do it again, I would probably throw in a more innovative trail shoe I'm experimenting with just now. But I certainly preferred road shoes before, but I quite like these Innovates Rock Lights, which is John's shoe, I'm sure, or used to be. So we'll see.
An energy drink, would you drink carbohydrates in your drink or electrolytes?
I drink a high five 4-in-1, so it's protein and carb mix.
In the race?
In the race.
And electrolytes?
Which has electrolytes in it, so it gives me everything.
Right, protein.
Protein.
Carbohydrates and electrolytes.
Yeah. Protein, any. An endurance event, you have muscle wastage and you have to be preparing that. So there's been some studies somewhere that protein drinks help. But I will mix that later on in the race and maybe have some water, coke, or dilute juice, because it can get a little bit sickly after a while.
Okay, would you eat solids, or would you recommend it, or do you want to eat solids like bread or a fry-up or pasta or sausages?
Certainly. At the start, I try to eat more solids, bars of kind of chewy things, and I then also try to stick to my meal times. So at breakfast time, say 7 o'clock, round about. Would that be where we're doing?
No.
7 o'clock? maybe 6 o'clock, something like that. Where we're doing, I'll tend to have some breakfast cereal and have a little rest. Not a rest, like a walking rest through where we're doing.
We swap sides, flex my arm.
Then at lunchtime I'll probably have more cereal or something else, and then at Kinloch leaving I'll have more cereal again. But in between that I'll move from a more solid to later on more jelly babies and gels towards the end when your stomach starts to have issues. But the biggest thing I can ever say is that food is just a personal preference, and what you do, you should practice your food until you know exactly where it should be.
Exactly, very good point.
What about you, Thomas? What energy drinks or drinks would you use, and what food?
I mean, the question is actually not what do I want or what tastes right, but what can I actually get down?
It's what you want, a bit chips.
Yeah. I don't think chips are actually wrong.
I've had chips.
If you can eat them. I had chips in my first ultra training run, which was actually the devil's. Yeah. And I phoned Silke, she was supporting me in Kinderleben. And I said to her, I need to have chips, I want to have chips. And she said, what? You know, that can't be the right food. But I was really craving
salt,
tomato
vinegar,
ketchup,
I've had the chips before. The chips are actually good, but you can't eat that many.
Yeah.
Just a few.
But in a race, I can't really get chips down. I don't know, because maybe
it's dry.
It's the excitement or the stress of the race.
Definitely in the second half, I find it's a problem to get things
Some people eat potatoes. I've tried that, that's okay for me. If you can get them down.
Yeah.
I would eat potatoes, pasta, bread, if I only could get it down. So the most I can actually eat is gels. Not that I like them or...
Entire run?
Yeah, some of my races are entirely just with gels. But the only reason I can't get anything else down. So that's my... It's just it's a compromise. I would eat bread or potatoes or pasta if I could. Yes. So yeah, we are running on the public footpaths here, so we have now done 70 and a half miles, still running. But maybe quickly, Marco, since you are sponsored by Hamden Sports Clinic, is it correct?
Yes.
So what do they do, and does it help you?
Certainly.
Does it increase your performance? Or
it certainly helped me when I started, and it helps now as well. When I started, like we were saying earlier, running, we raced everywhere. Everything was like a roadrunner's mentality, where you had to be sweating, you had to be pushing. And when I first went to Hamden, it was just after the second failure. Not the second failure, but the second time I'd done the West Ham Way, when it was really hard. And I was lucky to beat 24 hours. I was broken. It took me absolutely months to go over it, and I considered not running. It took me months to get running again, and Debbie bought me this Hamden thing to get me going. And I went there, and they gave me all my zones. So they did a lactic threshold and a VO2 test, and from there I now found my zones that I should do a recovery run or a long distance run, and I was surprised at how easy running got. No longer was it out blasting every run, but I was enjoying it, stopping to see the sights, and just going by heart rate rather than pace.
Uh-huh.
And they looked over my plan and made some changes, told me what zones I should run in, and instead of being knackered all the time, I was doing runs and actually looking forward to them and enjoying them, and coming to the end of a long run saying, I could do a few more miles, I could do another 10 miles.
Yeah,
okay. Rather than the last 5 miles feeling like I could cry.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, that's a mistake we made in earlier training runs. But I found one reason why we went so hard in training was going hard in training brings its own kind of enjoyment.
Yes.
You feel really tired afterwards and really knackered, but that's what you want. You want to feel exhausted, but it's not the most wise decision to do in training.
The problem with doing that in training is it makes you feel good, but in the end it counts as nothing.
Yeah, absolutely.
In 5 years time,
you don't waste yourself, yeah.
You don't remember your race. Your race training. You remember your races where you... And if you're constantly beating someone in training, yet they beat you in a race, then it means nothing. You beat them for 6 months training. The race is the race is always the main thing. Everything leads up to that race. You always have to have an eye on, is this making a difference in training run? Is this taking too much out of me, etc. How will I recover from it?
Yes, recovery is very, very important. You can do anything in training, anything, as long as you recover from it. I think that's a golden rule. Otherwise, the race or the training takes stuff out of you rather than getting stuff in. And the other thing that I realise now as well is that doing a race doesn't add to your fitness a race. It takes fitness away.
That's right.
It mentally can prepare you for racing.
Yeah.
If you do races coming up to your main event,
yeah,
you need to watch what you do.
It prepares you mentally, yeah.
Mentally it prepares you, but physically it doesn't help.
Yeah. It takes stuff out of you more than it gets it back.
And so if you race your training, all you're doing is taking more out than you're putting in. Especially racing.
I agree, yeah.
Back to back over 2 weeks. Which comes to another, what kind of races would you do, Thomas, leading up to this hill?
I would do races which, as we just discovered, I can recover from. I do remember I was once running the Caton Trail, but it's just too close to the West Highbury race. Sorry. And
for you, some people
for
can
me,
do it.
Yeah, no. I know that. No, absolutely. I remember George Cairns, Richard Cunningham, having a really good Caton Trail race and just killing the West Highbury race, but yeah, I think they do recover very, very well.
The Caton Trail has to be taken seriously, and you can't take it 100% so close to the West Highbury.
Yeah.
Like Jack won that by miles.
Jack Brown, yes. Yes,
so
it took too much out of him, yeah.
Yeah, Richie that year took it quite conservatively.
Yeah.
So the catering can be done, but you really need to think my goal is the West Ham way.
Yeah.
And not go back. Even the flying 1 year I took that a little bit too hard. And running with Jez.
Alright. And yeah, I remember.
I didn't recover quick enough from that. Yeah. A year later, I was 30 minutes quicker, but I'd taken the first half very conservatively. Got beaten by some German guy.
Look at me. Wasn't crazy at all.
So, but I find a good lead up to it. I like doing the D33, the flying, the national cross country. That would be me really for maybe a couple of 10Ks in the winter. But nothing that'll take away from your main long runs. So you've got bread and butter runs before.
Yeah, but back to the fling. Generally speaking, for most of runners, even if they race the fling, like Jess Brock, Scott Bradley, etc. Both won the fling. Sorry, not well. Scott finished second, but it was the second fastest time ever. He had the team won the now the third fastest. Yeah, Jess has got second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth fastest. Andrew James now with the fling record. But the fling has a good recovery space to the West Highbury race, so you can, and it gives you, can give you confidence and race experience.
Well, I think one thing is, like, if you go far too hard, the last 15 miles is a disaster for you, then although you can recover, the problem is the next 2 weeks are very important for West Highbury training.
Yeah.
Because you've got a tape, is it 6 weeks between the tape? The fling?
6 or 7, it depends.
Right. So, if you want to do your longest run, 3 weeks or 4 weeks.
Right.
3-4.
Yeah,
so it's long way. You want to be doing not maybe the longest because your longest would be the fling.
Yeah.
You want to be still really running long. You'll still be knackered, but you've got to still be able to do a good long run for
weeks before myself. Turn about 30k.
Nearly 19 miles.
Okay, 19 miles, so still 5 miles to go. But the point was, you can do any race you like, as fast as you like, as long as you recover well from it and you don't mess up your training for the time race, yes. Which is a balance. But the Catron Trail might be a bit close for some. The Flink is probably alright, but you probably benefit from the Flink more if you take it easy. Because as we said, the race doesn't improve your training fitness. It takes out your fitness and costs you. Good point. Going too fast again.
Well,
great. Let me check.
I bet you forgot to press record.
No, it was 40 minutes now recorded.
Yeah.
But it was windy sometimes. What happens then? It's still recording. Oops.
God give me style and give me grace. God put a smile upon my face.
Okay, welcome to our second runner who has been willing to be interviewed for the West Highland Way blog. And this is Colin Knox, and it's great to have Colin with us. And this will be Colin's first attempt at the West Highland Way race. And so, as with Caroline, we're going to interview him once a month over the next few months, and find out more about his training. So first of all, Colin, if you can tell us a little bit about your background to the race and why you decided to enter.
Yeah, the race seemed like a logical challenge after doing 9 ultras last year. I kind of fell into it by accident after I came across the Highland Fling race and read the various different descriptions of the race and watching the videos, and my training kind of developed from there. I started off with 10Ks and half marathons, and so after the Fling 1 year, I thought this seems like a really good adventure. Excuse me. And it's one of these things. I like hill walking, I like running, this kind of combines the two together. The ultras so far that I've run have been all trail races, and I seem to prefer the off-road stuff to the road stuff. And the Fling's one of these races that you keep hearing about from various people, and it seems the kind of race that you want to try and push yourself to do. Whether it's a good idea or not, that's to be seen. But I'm up for the challenge for doing something of that distance.
Mm. Excellent. And I know your blog is very entertaining and has all your details on of all your races you've done. And I think last year you did 7 of the Sons races.
Yeah, yeah. I did 7. I only intended doing 7 of them to finish them. Ended up running 8 of them. I kind of fell into the double by accident. I got a last minute place in that race, which was quite good.
Mm.
I was nervous about that one because I'd never really concentrated in the second half of the West Highland Way. Yeah. I've really only walked and run on the first half, and I'd no idea what to expect.
Mm.
But it's one of these races you just kind of fall in love with. And I'm looking forward to adding it on to the Fling, doing the two together. But it's quite frightening.
Mm.
I thought of running 95 miles all in the one go.
Yeah.
So it's going to be the challenge, I think, is getting my head round 95 miles.
Yeah.
As opposed to doing 52 and then doing the 43. So it's something I'm going to have to try and overcome in my own head.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is the one that you've not done really out of all the Sons races.
Yeah, that's right.
So at this point, we're 3.5 months away. Mm-hmm. What would you say your goals are for the race?
Initially, I think a lot of people doing it for the first time is to get across the finishing line.
Mm.
It's a huge, huge challenge, physically and mentally. I'd be happy just to finish it, but in the back of my mind, I've got time targets. I'd like to try and finish in about 30 hours. I don't have anything to base it on. I've looked at my Highland Fling times, and my Devil of the Highland times, and it's just guesswork as to what I could finish in, but finishing, just getting to that finish line, into Fort William, would be fantastic. I've seen people finishing the race from last year, being up to the finish line, and it's seen the smiles, even though they've been through that pain. It's something I'd like to be there at the end.
Yeah, and you will be.
Yeah.
Do you have a training plan? And if so, what are sort of the main elements of it, would you say?
Training plans, I'm not... when I ran 10Ks and half marathons, I would have a training plan. When I first started doing ultras, I didn't have a clue what I was doing. And really to this day, I still make it up as I go along.
Right.
I'll get up in the morning, go for a run. I don't really plan where I'm going to run or how far I'm going to run for. I'll go up onto the Braes in the back of Paisley and just run for a couple of hours. A lot of the time I don't know where I'm going, but I think the best runs take you to places you haven't been before. So the main element in a training plan, if I do look at having a proper plan written down, would be just to try and concentrate on the West Highland Way route. Run the ground that you're going to be running on for that race. Did that in January. I ran, I think it was 5 training runs on it, the varying distance. I want to try and do that again over the next few months. Training plan wise, long runs, I've got a few races coming up, the D33, the Fling, the Cataran. So they're going to form the sort of backbone of the main sort of long runs each month.
Yeah.
But it works for me making it up, not having specific plans. I find that in the past when I've had targets to reach, I don't get them and I'm disappointed myself.
Right.
Whereas if I just put the shoes on and head out the door, as long as I feel I'm doing well, I'll stick with what I'm doing just now.
Yeah. I think the advantage we have of living so close to the route is that within an hour or so you can be up, can't you?
Oh, yeah.
And you can be on the route. So
it
is a big advantage, those who live a long way from the route.
Yeah.
You know, and they only see it on the day, I think it is a lot harder. So how would you say your training's going so far?
Training's going, it's going really well. January was a good month with all the West Highland Way runs. Off the back of doing the Markathon, which I hadn't really intended doing. I've never really run 30 days every single day. I like my rest days, but it was good to tick over during December. It's always a hard month. January went really well, as I said, with the West Highland Way runs I've had. I've got to know the route really well. I know which bits I don't like, which bits I need to concentrate more on. The main hurdle really is getting my head round, running that distance. It's a psychological thing, keep myself motivated just now. But the training's going, it's going well. I've got a rough idea of what I want to do each month. I want to try and concentrate on the northern end of the route over the next couple of months. It's a bit I'm nervous about, especially the double staircase. The Kinloch leading section up onto Larrigmoor as well is the one I want to try and do a wee bit of mileage on that as well.
Yeah. Great, excellent. And finally, at this point of the race, is there anything that you're worried or concerned about? What are the things that you lie in bed at night and think, oh, that concerns me?
I think a lot of it's down to nutrition as well. I've made some really bad mistakes over some of the races last year. My salt intake, I messed that up in a few races with the really hot days we had. Making sure I'm actually eating and digesting food. I've got a really bad habit of just eating rubbish on the routes, not eating properly. I tried all the sort of fatty bars and the various gels, but they don't seem to settle in my stomach very well. So it's to try and mess around to see what I can keep down for the whole event and staying hydrated. And I suppose it's when things get really tough, it's the fear of giving up too easily and giving up too soon. I did that in the Fling, I think. Now I regret that last year, giving up too close to the end. I think I talked myself out of that. But I don't have any other worries fitness-wise. I think just making sure I stay healthy. I don't get ill towards the race. I don't pick up any daft injuries as well. The last long race I've got before, it's a Cataran, and I think it's a 5-week gap between that and the West Highland Way race, so it's just to be careful and not overtrain as well.
Great, well thank you Colin, and we'll do this again once a month over the next few months, and it'll be interesting to see whether some of those fears have been relieved or how things go, but thanks for doing this.
Thanks John.
Lessons I've learned from the West Harlem Way, number 9. This one is about the use of the buff. When I first started running the West Harlem Way and had entered, I remember Dario gave me the 2007 buff, which was a purple colour, round about the Christmas time before the race, so that was great. And I remember wearing it every long run that I did, as a sort of reminder of the fact that I was doing the race. Not that I needed reminding, really, but it was something that I just wore all the time. In fact, I remember writing on my number on the buff. I was number 93 the first year, and I put number 93 on the buff, so every time I put it on, it reminded me of the race. And I found it really helpful through the winter. It's really good. You can wear it in all sorts of ways, as a cap or just as a headband. You put it around your wrist, all sorts of things. And I found it one of the best bits of kit that I have, and I wear them regularly for long runs. But I remember one time I was running and it was really warm, and I remember I was running along, and I was with I think it was with Debbie, I've forgotten her surname, anyway, and we were running along and it was really hot, and we were running over the Larrack Moor, and she suggested to me, just dip it into the stream, put your buff into the stream and put it on your head. And I tell you, the difference it made was superb. So I find the buff is so helpful when it's cold and it's wet, but also when it's really hot. And you can, if you just need refreshing, just dip it into a stream as you run past, wring it out, put it on your head wet, and it just soaks your head and keeps your head cool during the hot weather. So, but the buff for me is an important piece of kit, and I always make sure I wear one. I find it when you're running with a head torch in that first few hours of the race, it's really comfy as well, because you put your head torch on top of it, and so it doesn't rub against your head. And if you need to take it off, you can just put it on your wrist or put it in your bag, whatever. But it's a great piece of kit. So the use of the buff is something which I've found really helpful. Well, I hope you've enjoyed this 6th episode of the West Harlem Way Race Podcasts. And next week, I've not got, not quite sure what I've got planned for next week, but there will be one. I am meeting up with a few other ultra runners over the weekend as a reunion of the 24-hour race that took part in Llandudno. So I would imagine I'll get some good material over that weekend and put something together for next week's podcast. But thanks again for those that have been listening, and I hope that you've been enjoying these. I've had some nice feedback from different people saying that they found them really helpful and they are listening to them. So it's obviously worth doing, and we'll be building up quite a library of them if we keep doing them at this rate. So I hope you have enjoyed your run. If you've been running while you've listening to this, if you've got a bit of time to go, then hang in there. And I hope everyone is well on track for this year's race and enjoying the preparation. So thanks again, and tune in next week. Where do we go to draw the line? I've gotta say, I wasted all your time, honey, honey. Where do I go?